Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody?
You motherfucker.
Fantastic.
I was even holding my laughter in.
Get the chuckles out. Come on.
It's his fault.
You good?
I'm okay.
You good?
Yeah, we're good.
You sure you're good?
Yep. Good. We're good.
Cool. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We got Jacob and Aki joining today. How are you two doing?
Well, I mean, I'm here. You know, I'm not wearing adult diapers. It's a good day.
Not yet, anyways. Don't worry. He'll get there.
What? Are you telling me of a foreboding future, Aki?
It's not foreboding. It's just a fact of life.
Fact of life.
Don't worry. You'll deal with it one day just like I have.
Yeah, you know, seizures are what they are. Sometimes you got to do what you gotta do.
Yeah, this show is off the rails. We didn't even fucking start and like, this show is off the rails.
I was going to say, you didn't even get to do the opening, and yeah, we've already messed it up.
I mean, I did the intro. Like, I don't have an intro anymore. I don't have a fucking normal co-host anymore. It's like, this is the post-divorce episode where, like, mommy ran off to go get milk, and I'm stuck with the two kids. Like, you little fuckers, I have to put up with you now.
I won't get bitchy anymore, if that helps. Now I can borrow my games.
It's so all right, Joe. We know.
He sucks. It's fine.
Besides, we all know mommy never loved me anyway.
Yeah, very true. Very, very true.
I was definitely the least favorite child.
No. I think it was tied.
Yeah,
really? Stole all
my yeah, she hated both of you equally.
Yeah.
Right, really? Up there with me. And then right up there with Pernell, Chris, and Tim, now Aki's probably higher.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like I was probably hated the most. So.
Oh, man.
I got that going for me.
No, she stole all my games. She didn't steal all your games.
What? Yeah, right. There were, Oh, God. There was a number of stuff that I wanted that Joe's just like, no, Cole got it. Because she's a co-host and is actually important, not like you.
Either that or it would be like, Cole reviewed that 3 months ago.
Yeah, because it would come up on like an Xbox sale and I'd see it was like Radileka or something like that. And I'd be like, oh, hey, Joe, like, you know, can we check, like, can I review this? You're like, yeah, Cole already did it 3 months ago and you did the tweets for it.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I'm probably going to be the one doing that to you now.
Great.
Because when you wait until there's a fucking sale, that means it is long past been reviewed.
Well, usually they, like, when it gets released, they knock it down, like, by a buck for, like, a week or something like that. And usually that's when I thought it was on sale, but no.
No, you're just dumb.
No. Yeah. I mean, come on. I'm the one who, dang it, what was that game? Hyper? Like, I requested it, like, 3 years after it came out on Xbox.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And got it, which shocked me.
Well, yeah, because Joe was just like, yo, our code.
Yeah, because I emailed the devs, and I'm like, he thought the game was a new release. I'm going to make him review it. Do you guys want him to review it? And they're like, yeah, here's a code. Have it do it up.
To be fair, it was because the website Wing Commander Combat Information Center, like, they'll talk about other space sim games. And so, like, they were talking about it one time. I was like, oh, okay. Well, usually they only talk about new games, so this must be new. Nope. 3 years ago.
Carnage, yeah. You guys are drunk. No, I am very clearly not drunk. I'm not a drinker, really.
I just got home driving my kids from my folks. So
okay, so no, you were drunk.
Might be.
No, I'm stone cold sober right now. Thank you very much.
And I don't drink very often. When I drink a lot, but I don't drink very often. And I don't
Hold on. We're not necessarily just talking about drinking here. So
he said you guys are drunk.
So yeah, right now we're talking about. Damn it. Anyway, right. that leads to some of the news of the week. MAGFest is happening.
Cool.
That's cool.
MAGFest, Super MAGFest is happening January 6th through the 9th. Registration will be opening Wednesday, September 29th at 3 p.m. on the Super MAGFest website. Tickets this year for the full weekend, $110.
$110?
Yes.
Is that high or low?
Last year, I think, was $80.
Oh, so it's a little higher.
Yeah, it is a significant increase.
Good job on the math, Aki.
Well, I didn't know how much it
was. You know what? Fuck you guys for being silent on that one. Fuck you. Fuck you all. Hate this.
Yeah, it's going to be $110 for pre-registration. If you wait until you're at the door, it's going to be $125. And then that will be prorated as the days go by. It'll be like $110 or $80 or I don't know. Depends on what you're doing.
It kind of makes sense because they can't have as many people there, I assume, because of social distancing and shit.
I don't know if there's going to be an attendance cap. I don't know what they're doing. I don't even know if there's going to be a lot of interest in people going because of, you know, there's a fucking deadly virus out there. They already stated vaccines are required to attend.
Oh, then they might not have that. Huh.
I mean, good luck on enforcing that, because, I mean, like, there's people who are faking them now.
Yeah, my neighbor has a fake one.
You should report them.
Report them and then beat the shit out of them for doing that shit.
Yeah.
At the very least, report them for having a fake one.
Okay.
That
I can do.
That's easy. Absolute garbage. People who have fake vaccination cards need to be slapped.
Yep.
Yeah, he got that forever ago.
My freedoms. Go fuck yourself. How about that?
He's convinced that the vaccine is more likely to hurt you than anything.
All right.
No, the virus is more likely to hurt you than anything.
Yeah.
The thing that kills you? That might kill you.
I was going to say, I've been vaccinated since the end of April. I can tell you, I've literally only had one side effect. Okay? I sleep on my left side now. I'm dead serious. That is I'm just like this is the thing now. Like I can't fall asleep on my right side now. I'm dead serious when I say this. And I'm like, when I discovered this, I'm like, how do I even talk to my doctor about this? Like, I don't think
you talk to your doctor. You talk to your psychologist.
I was gonna say it's one of those things where I'm just like, do I talk to my doctor or do I just keep this to myself? Like,
you talk to your therapist about this because you're batshit insane.
Shut up. It's true.
Yeah, y'all are awful. I didn't have any. I was perfectly fine after both of my vaccine shots because I got the 2-shot one. I was fine. It didn't bother me at all.
I felt shitty for like a few hours the one night while doing the show, and that was it.
Yeah, it hurt for like a few minutes after they gave me the shot, and then it was it. Then I was fine. I was like, whatever.
I felt like shit for 24 hours after the first shot, and then the second shot, I was out for like 3 or 4 days, and I was really pissed at the time because I thought I had planned it for the release of new Pokemon Snap, and I was just like, oh, sweet, I'm just going to stay in bed and just play new Pokemon Snap the whole time. Wrong. Like, I got my shot the week before it came out, and so I just, and so, well, the thing is, thank you, but, like, the thing is, I ended up just staying in bed asleep the whole time anyway, so I wouldn't have played the game had I, like, timed it correctly. I just, as I said, I now sleep on a different side.
Root beer, I don't need the vaccine for that.
Vaccine made me horny.
That's a natural state of my life.
Oh, Jesus. All right. You're talking about Nintendo. There was a Nintendo Indie Direct today. Did anyone see any of the news from this?
I had to deal with the kids, so no.
God damn. You guys are about as useful as Cole when it comes to Nintendo stuff.
I heard a few things. All right. I heard that Bayo 3 is coming out next year, and that's about it.
They announced the cast for the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Of course you heard that. Of course you heard that.
That shit was real? Oh, yeah. God. I thought people were faking that.
No. Nope. No, we'll get to it. They started off the Indie Direct showing off a little bit of Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak DLC, which is a massive expansion coming in summer of 2022. They showed off a little bit of Mario Party Superstars, which features some boards from the N64 Mario Party game. So that's nifty. That's coming out October 29th. Jacob, are you picking that one up or no?
Pick what?
Mario Party Superstars.
No, I'm actually not a fan of the Mario Party series.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not big on party games that much. Like between Mario Party and Super Smash Brothers, like both of those series could die and I would not notice anything.
Oh, Super Smash is fantastic. But I don't own a Nintendo system, so.
Now you should look into a Switch. Now is the time.
I'd rather use that money to buy an Xbox.
Very true. And we could use someone doing reviews who has a Series X, if anyone's listening. Voice of Cards, The Isle Dragon Roars was announced for the Switch. It's coming out October 28th. It's like a card, like entirely card-based RPG. Like the levels are made of cards. You're walking around. It looks really interesting. Coming from Square Enix, there's a free demo out today, so you can check it out now if you want. Disco Elysium, The Final Cut is going to be hitting the Switch October 12th.
Nice.
And a physical release is coming early 2022. They showed off some of the DLC for Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity Expansion Pass, Wave 2, which is coming October 29th. So, they're having a busy late October, like everything. Mario Party's October 29th, Voice of Cards the 28th, Hyrule Warriors the 29th. What's going on there?
Wasn't this an indie thing you said originally?
Well, it's a mix. It was just the Nintendo Direct. I thought it was indie stuff.
An indie showcase, and I was like, Mario and Zelda.
No, I originally thought it was an indie showcase, but it was just like a Nintendo Direct. I didn't update my shit. I'm just dumb.
So it's all good.
My mind is preoccupied. Go figure. Chocobo GP is coming from Square Enix. It is coming 2022. It is going to be an exclusive, and it looks adorable as fuck.
Yes.
You remember Chocobo Racing from the PlayStation 1? It's basically that.
Chocobos are adorable. I love Chocobos.
I like the item system. They're going to have like the magic system in Final Fantasy, where if you pick up a fire item, it casts fire. If you pick up a second one, it's like Fira, and then Firaga. So you could build up the spell the more you collect. That looked pretty interesting. Smash Brothers Ultimate will reveal the final fighter on October 5th in its own separate direct. So they're announcing announcements. That's always fun.
Shit, I thought they had the last fighter forever ago. Holy crap.
Nope, they got one more coming.
Nice.
One more, and hopefully it's Miyamoto. Just want to play as Shigeru Miyamoto beating the shit out of him. Kirby and the Forgotten Land was announced for spring 2022, a brand new Kirby game.
Those are always cute.
Yeah, it looked pretty adorable. Running around, and like people were joking that it was a kid's version of The Last of Us, because it was like all abandoned society and like malls with vegetation and stuff. People were like, oh, The Last of Us is coming to the Switch. they announced another announcement. Animal Crossing is getting a new direct in October, with new content coming in November, and we'll find out more next month. Brewster is coming. So if you remember him from the older games running the coffee shop, he'll be back. Mario Golf gets a new update today with Koopa Troopa and Ninja playable, and two new courses coming as well. They announced Disney Magical World 2 coming this holiday. Jacob, I'm sure you're excited about that one. Something I know Jacob is excited for. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is coming to the Switch November 11th.
Very nice.
I mean, that's cool, but I mean, at the same time, is it like that's not the remake. That's PS5. This is,
The remake is PS5 exclusive for the first year. This is basically the original Knights of the Old Republic.
Hold on, back up. the remake, you said that's now confirmed to be a 1-year exclusive?
Supposedly. I don't...
Yeah, it may be a 1-year exclusive, but that doesn't mean they'll ever make it for any other system after that.
True.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, but at the same time, I mean, it's Star Wars, they like money, so...
Yeah.
You would think that with most places, yet we still don't have Final Fantasy VII fucking remake, so...
No, hopefully soon. Dying Light Platinum Edition is hitting the Switch October 19th. So if you've been waiting to play Dying Light on the go, there you go. They also announced that Dying Light 2 will be hitting the Switch with a cloud version coming February 4th.
Well, that's cool.
Yes. How does that work?
Basically, you play it through the cloud. It's kind of like xCloud or Stadia. You're just playing a cloud version of the game through your Switch.
Huh.
I don't know how well that's going to work, but that should be fun if it works really well.
There are a couple of games already out that have cloud versions on the Switch. I haven't played any of them, though, so I don't know if they're good or not. Triangle Strategy is coming March 4th. Metroid Dread is coming October 8th, which everyone's excited about. And then here's what got people talking. The Nintendo Switch Online Expansion Pack. They're adding a new tier to their membership plan.
What?
Yes, the new plan will include everything that's currently there, plus you get N64 and Genesis games.
What?
How much is the price increase?
We don't know yet. More information, including pricing and a solid release date, is coming later. They did announce which games are going to be launching. The N64 is going to have Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, Mario Kart 64, Star Fox 64, Sin and Punishment, Dr. Mario 64. What?
I was just like, all right, don't say Star Fox. Don't say Star Fox. And it was just like, ah, damn it. I'm going to need this now.
Sin and Punishment, Dr. Mario 64, Mario Tennis 64, Win Back, and Yoshi's Story. And then on the Genesis side, they're going to have Sonic 2, Streets of Rage 2, Echo the Dolphin, Castlevania Bloodlines, Contra Hardcore, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, Golden Axe, Gunstar Heroes, Musha, Fantasy Star 4, Rystar, Shining Force, Shinobi 3, and Strider.
Okay, and then there's some damn good games on that part.
Yeah. And they'll be playable online, like the Nintendo Switch Online stuff is playable now. It's just they'll be locked to this new subscription tier.
So buy it for a month or two and then go back to the old one after you've played the games. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm just like, these are games that they've released like how many damn times?
Yeah, Nintendo's gonna Nintendo. They announced that there are more N64 games that will be coming. They confirmed F-Zero X, Paper Mario, Mario Golf, Kirby 64, Majora's Mask, Pokemon Snap. And this one caught my interest, Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so they're Microsoft's letting them throw Banjo-Kazooie on their new service. They also announced that they will have N64 and Genesis controllers available to buy.
Which was suspected.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask something simple. Who the fuck wants to buy an N64 goddamn controller? That is one of the most annoying fucking controllers I've ever touched.
If you're playing N64 games, probably everyone. Because they translate weird to normal controllers. Having an actual N64 controller would probably work really well.
I hated that controller. It was made for people with three fucking hands. What the fuck?
The controllers are going to be $50 each. Not bad. And then let's see what else. Shadowrun Trilogy is coming in 2022 to the Switch.
Hello.
Castlevania Advance Collection includes Circle of the Moon, Harmony of Dissonance, Aria of Sorrow, and Castlevania Dracula X is out today.
Nice.
Surprise. Here. We've been anticipating it, and it's here. It's not on Xbox yet. I don't know why. I thought it would show up at 8, but maybe at midnight it'll show up. ActRaiser Renaissance is coming to the Switch from Square Enix. It has new stages, boss battles, new music, and it's out today. There's another one. Surprise.
I don't know anything about that game, so...
Well, tough shit because you're not going to play it because it's on everything but Xbox.
Sounds about right. Damn
it. Seriously, it is on Switch, PlayStation 4, PC, and mobile. But
they went not to fucking Xbox. Mobile, but not Xbox? What the fuck?
Thanks, Square. Y'all are doing great. Deltarune Chapter 2 out today on the Switch. And then there were just some quick flash titles. They showed Hot Wheels Unleashed. Surviving the Aftermath is coming this holiday. Shin Megami Tensei 5. Wreckfest is hitting this fall. Pac-Man and Xevious released today through the Arcade Archives program. Rune Factory 5 coming in March 22nd. And then Miyamoto showed up to talk about the Mario movie.
I question everything about that movie now that I know that that shit wasn't made up. I question so fucking much.
They confirmed that the movie's coming holiday 2022. I think they said December 21st in America.
I think it's the 22nd.
I've got
it up. It's... Oh, no, you're right. It is the
21st. Yeah, eat shit. Mario is going to be played by Chris Pratt.
I just don't see that working at all. But... Maybe he can do good voice. I don't know.
Maybe that's wrong. I'm not gonna knock it until I see it because I'm a fan of Chris Pratt. I think he's funny.
Very true.
Curious to see what he does, and he's surprised us in roles before. So I'm not gonna knock it until I see it. Peach is going to be played by Anna Taylor Joy. Luigi is going to be Charlie Day.
That one just confuses me.
I'm really hoping that he does I really hope that he just does like a terrible Italian accent the whole entire movie.
It'd be amazing.
Like, you know, just opens up with, "Hey, paisanos."
God. Bowser is going to be played by Jack Black.
That should be interesting.
I think that's pretty perfect casting there. I'm curious to see how that works out. Toad is going to be played by Keegan-Michael Key.
Wow.
Like, the more they announce to these, the more I'm thinking, like, is this a joke? Is this real? They're... Oh, man. Donkey Kong is going to be in the movie.
With what Seth the Rogen.
Fuck? No. Yeah, with
Seth Rogen.
No. What the fuck is going on? Oh, my God.
The only thing they're missing, Jacob... from Tall Green Plumbers, they need Broshy.
That's true. I wonder, well, it does say surprise cameos from Charles
Martinet. Yeah. And they also conferred Fred Armisen would be Cranky Kong.
Kevin Michael Richardson. I don't know if I know who that is.
He's an actual voice actor.
Well, no shit, but I mean, like...
He's done, like, every deep voice ever.
Okay, then that should work pretty well.
Oh, he played Goro in the original Mortal Kombat movie.
There you go.
Okay, then.
And then after Miyamoto, they wrapped it up showing off some trailers for Splatoon 3 and Bayonetta 3, which is coming out in 2022.
Nice.
Yeah.
All the Bayo fans should be super happy. They've been clamoring for another one for a long time.
Indeed. Let's see. The only other news I have this week, Jackbox Party Pack 8 is coming out October 14th.
They're still making fucking party packs for that?
Yep, got a new one this year. So, and then Mark McGinty, the iconic artist behind Street Fighter 2, Streets of Rage 2 and 3, Kid Chameleon, and many more, has passed away.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Jacob, what news do you have?
Well, I actually don't have that much.
Thank God.
So we'll only be here for like 30 minutes, okay?
Niantic has shut down Catan World Explorers, which had a soft launch last year. Pretty much it tried, I guess it was like a Pokemon Go version of like Catan, the famous board game. I don't know if you guys ever played that.
No.
Nope.
Okay.
Chris played a Catan tournament at MAGFest.
A Catan tournament?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what he called it, a Catan tournament.
All right. Well, yeah, it was just, you know, you had to trade, harvest, and build up your world in your area. So I don't know how well it works. Maybe it didn't work. But yeah, so it got killed. And the last bit of news I have is something I forgot to talk about last week. We're getting a Driver live action series.
Yeah.
Oh, yippee.
Because, you know, We need that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're also going to be getting a new game in the series as well. So,
yippee.
The series will stream exclusively on Binge, which I don't,
what the
I don't
fuck know. Is Binge? I don't even know what the hell that is.
I don't know. It says it seeks to create high quality content for gamers. Binge channel? I've never heard of this.
All right. Are y'all ready for reviews? Let's get to these.
Yes. Please, yes.
All right.
It's Australian. What the hell?
First game to talk about tonight is called Tank Mechanic Simulator, developed by Console Labs and Degenerals, published by Playway, released May 19th on Xbox One for $19.99. Fix, build, and renovate highly detailed and fully interactive German, USA, or Soviet tanks, armored cars, or self-propelled guns. Experience a realistic simulator of being a tank mechanic. Jacob, tell us about this one.
So, pretty much, it's as you said. You know, you have to repair all these old tanks and then get them ready, and you get all these contracts and stuff. So the game, thankfully, has some semblance of a tutorial, but unfortunately, it's not a particularly helpful tutorial, and there's a lot to do in this game. So pretty much the game just tries to get you acclimated to your small little workshop. There's a computer where you can accept new contracts. You can slam out some emails, you can buy parts for your shop, that kind of stuff, and then you start off with just a main garage area where you bring in these tanks that you get through your contracts and stuff like that. And pretty much what each contract will do is be like, well, I need this repaired on my tank, and you can decide how you're going to go about and do that. Like, you can either go off and buy a brand new part from the store, or you could try to repair it in your shop, which takes up some time, usually about a minute. And it's always going to be cheaper than buying the stuff from the store. But of course, sometimes, you know, you're caught in a bind and all that kind of crap. So pretty much it's just like the game's just like, okay, well, you know, you hit this button to select the part and then you take this to remove it. But then it doesn't explain how you repair the parts. And so I was just like, oh, okay. So I walked over to the computer, bought the parts that I needed, and then walked back over to the tank, and I had them, but then the game doesn't explain how to put it together. And so I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I realized that I through something else that, oh, this is how I repair all the parts. So then I was just stuck with two of each of the parts. And God. And it's just like, I finally figured out what the heck I was supposed to do. And like, it took so much time just to figure out how to repair and replace three parts on a tank and then fulfill my contract. And then it's just like, okay. And then the game's like, okay, good. Like, you did a good job. Here's your money. Go off and do the next thing. So then you receive more emails. And what the game doesn't tell you, which would be, like, if this was supposed to be like a tutorial thing, it would be like, okay, good job. You did this. Now we're going to introduce this new section of the game to you. And it kind of does, but it kind of doesn't. And so I ended up accepting a contract for a new tank that is going to cost I think I'm going to get like $40,000 at the end of it. But I've already blown through almost my $10,000 in savings. So I'm probably going to have to get a loan from the bank on that. And then I've already taken apart and repaired half the tank, but I don't know how to put the damn thing back together. So as you can already guess, I'm not the best mechanic.
No, not even remotely. You're terrible. No,
thank you. But then I look at the emails and it's just like, oh, let's go grab a shovel and we're going to there's a tank out here that we need to dig up. And so, you get into your little off-road Jeep thing, which then as you're driving through the meadow, the grass clips through your windshield. Which I'm like, whatever. I mean, it's not the main part of the game, so I'm not overly concerned about it, but it's still like one of those like, but then the game's just like, oh, well, you need to do this. Like, and you have to use your metal detector to find the tank, and you have to like do all this kind of stuff. And so I'm just supposed to spend my time out in the middle of the field with a metal detector, just like trying to find this thing based on what some random dude is like, yo, go grab a shovel, figure this out. Like, the map doesn't give any kind of hint as to where it might be. And it's just like, you're looking at like the area of like a football field to try to find a tank. And I'm just like, guys, for a tutorial, this is not a very well-built tutorial. And then there's other stuff, too, because eventually you're going to be able to have a museum and you can display tanks and stuff like that. And, oh, speaking of which, my tank that I'm trying to figure out how to build back together, there's certain parts I can't take out of the tank because I have to put it up on a on some sort of stand. Well, the game doesn't tell you how to put it up on a stand. So I don't, like, first off, I don't even know if I have said stand to put it up on. So I may just have this like $40,000 tank half like you know, stripped halfway in the middle of my garage that I have no idea what to do with. I don't.
You put it back together.
Thanks, Aki. Dick. But it's just like, but I'm just like, this is a game that like this. It has the potential to be fun. It also didn't help that I was trying to play it today, and both of my kids were home, and they're like, "What are you doing? What does that do? Why are you in the middle of a field? What, are you finding this tank yet?" And I'm just, no, I am not finding this tank.
That's not a problem with the game. That's
oh, I know.
User
error. No. I realize that, like, this is something that you play by yourself, not around other people. Like, you know, it's best enjoyed alone. And it's just... Yeah, I didn't know what to do.
Did my mic pick that up? Because some dickhead just roared by.
Yeah, we heard.
Wow, what a dickhead. I hate my town.
Well, I mean, we do too, but, you know. Anyway, so it's just like, this is a game that, like, has the potential of being, like, I could find this as, a way to relax if I knew what the hell I was doing. And so it's just like... And honestly, it's not exactly the most intuitive game either. I feel like this might be a better, like, this might have, I might have enjoyed this more if I was playing this on a PC rather than Xbox. And so it's just like,
yeah, these games are very much made for the PC.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I kind of felt about Bus Simulator last week too. Yeah. And it's just like, this game is just like, I don't want to rag on it too much, but holy hell, does it need a better tutorial?
It seems like all these simulator games are lacking in tutorials.
Especially this company. Its tutorials are kind of eh.
Like, and it's just like, I think I would appreciate this more if I had a tutorial that actually explained what I was doing, what steps I need to make, instead of just, you know, just, all right, there's your garage. Have fun.
Well,
I'm going to give a try it. Like, because as I said, I think I'd enjoy this more if I was playing it on Steam versus Xbox, but I think it has the ability to be something I could definitely, like, kick back and relax and just, you know, as weird as it sounds, like, kick back, relax, take apart a tank, put it back together, and boom.
You'll never put it back together, you fucking liar.
Honestly, like, unlike some other games that, like, I've immediately deleted as soon as I finish the review, this is one of those things where I'm now just like, I'm gonna finish this damn tank out of spite. Like,
yeah, see, for me, these types of games would be better if not only they gave you better instructions, but if you didn't have to worry about money. The money aspect for me ruins it, which is why I try to break the money in all these types of games immediately if I can, because that makes it so much more fun when you never have to worry about money ever again.
That's kind of fair. Like, it would be kind of nice if there was not necessarily a sandbox mode, but like an infinite money thing where you didn't have to worry about whether or not you're really screwing this up. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. If I figure out how to break it, I'll let you know.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Next game to talk about is Orbital Racer, developed by Console Labs and Movie Games, published by Playway, released March 3rd on Xbox One for $14.99. In space, no one can hear you drift. Orbital Racer is a racing simulator set in space and combines the freedom of movement of 6 degrees of freedom space simulators with the thrills of racing. Jacob, what is Orbital Racer?
So, pretty much, it's a standard racing game, except you're set. It's in space! And so, this is going to be a big throwback, but imagine playing like the old Descent games, except now it's a racer. And that's pretty much what you have. And you can choose from different ships. And of course there's multiple courses. There's a ton of courses actually. And pretty much you just have to go through these different gateways, And after every, I think it's third gateway, it might be fourth, but after every like third or fourth gateway, you get a power up, and the power up is either boost, like some sort of like one and done laser, a mine, or, crud, I'm forgetting the other one. But anyway, and so it's just like you have to race against a bunch of other people in zero gravity. And of course, like, you know, they could shoot you down. If you hit a mine, like you could go way off course because it like disables your systems for a bit or blows you up. Or, you know, of course, you know, you're just trying to drift through everything. And so the problem is that it's probably based on actual physics, which I was just like, which unfortunately were not nearly as exciting as I'd hoped. And it's just like the game felt slow to me. And so it was just like going through the gates and like, you know, popping in like a bunch of bots and stuff like that kind of like added some excitement to it, but it unfortunately just never wowed me. It's just like you're going through the gates. And honestly, if any of my power-ups hit any of my enemies or like the other racers, I should say, it always felt like luck. And I always felt like the mines were useless unless like I was in first or second place. And then like I had a bunch of people behind me.
Yeah, that's how mines are always used.
No. Well, I know, but some games you have like some games you can throw the mines forward and stuff like that. And so it's just like you just go through the races. You know, there's various levels of difficulty. There's local multiplayer for it. But as I said, it just never really wowed me. I mean, like the graphics look nice. It's beautiful. Like, I mean, like the little space stations that they make, the planets that you're around, they all look nice. But it just didn't really do anything for me, unfortunately.
Well, on the bright side, it's not too expensive. It's only $15. So what are you thinking of this one?
I'd try it. I mean, like, I hate to, like, reference everything and just be like, well, this might be better on Steam. But, like, I could see, like, with some mod work being done on this game, I could see, like, a lot of fun things coming out of it.
Let's be fair. Games like this usually do play better with a mouse.
I don't know. I mean, I usually do fine. With Space Sims, like I usually do better with a controller than a mouse.
Really? You think so?
Yeah. I always have.
Your face. Like,
okay. I mean,
so your official verdict of $15?
That or also like a joystick. I mean, I wonder how this game plays with a joystick now. Anyway, $15, I'd put it as a try it. Like, as I said, it didn't, like, if you could amp up the speed in this game and make it feel like the power-ups actually did anything, then it would be an immediate buy it. But it's honestly too slow for its own good. And when you feel like the power-ups are more based on luck than skill, it's just not as fun.
No. All right, next game to talk about is Dojo Ran, developed by Knotlander, published by Rattle Lake Games, released September 17th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Life is not as easy and simple as it seemed in your childhood to survive a world full of dangers. You must go through difficult ninja training of frogs using secret techniques created by your ancestors. Jacob, what is this game?
Yeah, all right. So, like, that whole line about, you know, things are not as easy as they appear to be definitely applies to this game. Like, you get through the first... so, pretty much, you're this frog that has to move through the levels. It's a platforming game, in case I didn't make that clear. And so, you have to deal with the normal stuff. Spikes... like other enemies, like, you know, the usual hazards and stuff like that. But there's stuff that you could pick up along the way. Like, there's this like little fly power up, which if you fall on spikes, like the fly trades its life for yours. And so you can immediately hop out of danger, hopefully. There's also like an apple that you can grab that, you know, when you spit it out, you can use it as kind of like a platform to launch yourself over other stuff. I'm gonna be straight with you. This game is damn hard.
It is a tough one.
I was honestly hoping that this would be like a simple Rattalaika Games one, but it's not.
To be fair, it is a simple Rattalaika game achievement wise, but the game itself is fairly difficult. Like, there's only 28 stages in the game. The store page says 28 unique stages with platform challenges and gradual difficulty.
Gradual, that's laughable. I struggled to get past the second.
It gradually starts really hard.
From the moment you press start to begin, it gets much harder.
But in Rattalaika fashion, you can get the 1,000 achievement points after 5 stages.
That's handy.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I don't know, like, I had a real hard time using that apple as, like, a launching thing. Like, it just never, like, it, I don't know. To me, it always felt like luck when I was able to get across the platform area, or, like, a spiked pit area with that thing. Because half the time, I just land right in the spiked pit anyway after launching it. And so, this game is a damn challenge. So, if you're up for that kind of stuff, I could also see this being big in the speedrunning community. But you know, if you're looking for a simple platformer, not so much, but if you're looking for a good challenge, this is where it's at. I'd recommend this one.
And it's $5.
So. And it's $5. You can't lose on that.
And even better, it's on sale for the first week. It's $4. So
yeah.
What's your verdict?
There you go. So if you're, as I said, if you're looking for a challenge and or you like speedrunning stuff, this is a definite buy. If you were looking for something a little bit more simple and like that's going to hold your hand, you might want to look elsewhere, but it's a solid game.
Cool.
Thumbs up.
All right. You're done.
Woo!
Woo!
Thank God.
Cool. Do you have any final words?
Nah, I didn't think of any.
Good. Go. I have 30 minutes to do 3 reviews because you took too long.
Rude.
To be fair, he got 3 done in like 20 minutes. That was pretty good. That's pretty good. All right, moving on. We have an email review from Serlina for the game Olympia Soiree, developed by Idea Factory, published by Axis Games, released September 9th on the Switch for $49.99. The last surviving member of her clan, Olympia, travels to Tengu Island to perform a ritual to bring back the sun. The heads of each district lead a society governed by rigid class structures. Able to travel between the districts, Olympia discovers their wonders and weaknesses. She searches for a partner to help bring unity to this imperiled land. Serlina wrote in the review, this is what she's got to say. Greetings, my SML lovelies. It's me, Serlina, and this week I'm reviewing Olympia Soiree for the Nintendo Switch. Let's get to the review. Now, when Joe Cam offered this game to me, he said it was a visual novel, but it's not. It's actually an otome. Hopefully I'm saying that right. If not, she's going to bitch at me, and I'm going to hear it. For those uninitiated out there, like me, an otome is a visual novel game that usually has one heroine and several heroes that she can choose to be her one and only. In simpler terms, it's a chick dating game. What Joe Cam didn't know is that otome games are very much a guilty pleasure of mine, so I was thrilled to find out that this visual novel splits off into the wonderfully delicious world of otome. You play as Olympia of the White, the last of her kind, who's also tasked with praying to the sun goddess Amaterasu? Anyway, in order to keep the sun shining upon the land, I know that it sounds utterly ridiculous, but it works. As you learn more and more about Olympia and the island she lives on, you'll find an overarching theme of a caste system based on colors. And let me tell you, as I was going through the game, it made me hella uncomfortable. That's how you know a theme is good, by the way, when you think, I don't really like this, but I need to know what's going on. Yeah, the story is a heavy hitter, but in keeping with my tradition of visual novels reviews, I won't spoil too much. Since Olympia is the last of her kind and she's the only one who can pray for the sun, she bears the burden of finding a husband to continue her lineage. This is where we meet all the eligible bachelors. Lovelies, all the bachelors are good looking and they all have their distinct personalities, which I was thankful for. That's not all though. In addition to figuring out who you like, you also get to see Olympia grow from a girl who didn't even talk to people as to a woman who's willing to fight for what she believes in. It was a joy to watch her blossom. Enjoy story before I spoil everything. Let's talk about the gameplay and graphics. It's a visual novel, so as long as you can read and occasionally highlight an option, that's all there is to it. Graphically, the game sings, Olympia is a cutie pie, and all of the bachelors are hot in their own ways. Not only that, but it's a gorgeous game to look at. The character models are ridiculously detailed. The backgrounds of each scene are popping and realistic. Even the game's menu is so well done and unique. I was digging it. I should also talk about the voice acting because it's here. Unfortunately, the voices are Japanese, so I don't know what they're saying. It sounds all right, But there's this undeniable higher pitch from a lot of Japanese VA that I don't really care for. I like my men with some bass in their voice, but that's a cultural thing, I suppose. Also, everyone has voice lines except for Olympia. That makes no sense. Give her a voice. A major concern I have with this game is that it is long with a capital long. There are several arcs for each of the guys, but the first 5 hours of the game is Olympia's arc, which is essentially a prologue, so no choices, just reading and learning about the world, which is incredibly fleshed out. This isn't a bad thing, except all the arcs are this long. There are 6 bachelors. There are bad endings. I like to do all the things. This is a lot of time to spend. Olympia Soiree is available right now on the Nintendo Switch for $49.99, and should you buy it, I'm going to give this game a very tentative try it. There are several reasons for this. The game isn't bad by any means. In fact, it's great. However, you have to like Atomes. My guess is that the podcast listeners are comprised of a ton of people who've never played one. If that's the case, I can't recommend this one for your first one. Also, the time required to romance all the guys is substantial. If you're going to give this one a shot, limit yourself to about an hour or two at a time. However, if this is your bag, go for it. You'll love it. All right, next game to talk about is Maze Mysteries, The Secret of Dragonville, developed by V5 Play Studio DOO, published by Klebator, released September 23rd on Xbox One for $14.99. Follow May, an independent and charismatic girl, in her quest to find her missing brother, advance through the cartoon-style drawn adventures by solving over 270 logic puzzles, tricky rhythmic games, and hand-drawn hidden object scenes. Search for clues about May's brother, visit mysterious locations, and meet interesting characters along the way, which will help you in your journey. Tell us about it.
Okay, really, there's not much more to the story than that. It takes a couple hours to go through the story, so there's not much else to say about that, but it is laden with puzzles. And whilst the story is fairly clearly marketed for children, some of the puzzles are so hard that I, an adult, a smart one at that, had to look up a fucking walkthrough for some of these, because some of these logic puzzles get ridiculously hard. And it's not like it gradually gets harder. Some of them are just hard, some of them are easy, and they're just randomly thrown out to you. There's a bunch of puzzles that you have to solve throughout each little section of the game, to which there's 4. And also, as you complete these, you unlock bonus puzzles that you can do at any time you want. Upon completing the puzzles, you can get some points, which unlocks a hint system that you can use. I think it's like every 30 points you get or something like that gives you one hint that you can use, and every puzzle has, I believe, 2 hints. Some of the puzzles are, there are some worded logic puzzles, there's some drawing puzzles, there's some number puzzles, rhythm games. Like, it has a pretty nice grouping. There's even a pick-a-pick, is that what they're called, puzzles? Where you put the little squares on something, it tells you how many are in that row or in that column. Okay, yeah, there's even some of those in it. So it has, like, a wide range of different puzzles in it. So if you like puzzles, you're going to like this. But the story is for children. The rest of it, not so much.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screenshots, and they all look like mini games I just want to sit down and fuck with.
Yeah, that's pretty much the entire game. Every solution, everything you do in the game, every person you talk to has a problem. In order to get to the next area, you have to solve one of these little mini games. And there's something like 12 different types. I don't know what they all are anymore. I named a few of them, but so there's a bunch. And then all of the bonus ones you can unlock just help you get more points for hints. The hint system basically is really what they're for. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I went through that real quick.
Cool. $15. What do you think of this one?
I say it's a try it, because it gets pretty hard. If you really like puzzles, go for it. If you don't, you don't want this.
Cool, I'm throwing this one on my wish list.
Yeah.
All right, next game is Thief Simulator, developed by Noble Muffins and Console Labs, published by Playway, release of February 2020 on Xbox One for $19.99. Become the best thief, gather intel, steal things, and sell them to buy high-tech equipment. Do everything that a real thief does. Aki, how skilled are you in thievery?
Oh, I am very skilled in thievery. Sadly, you can't bash people's head in like a real thief. That was a real fucking shame. Because that's the one thing I really wanted to do 90% of that fucking game. Just every time someone kept catching me, all I wanted to do was use that crowbar to smack him in the fucking head. Can't do that. It just won't let you. Exactly. That's all I was thinking the whole time. Fuck you guys. In this game, you get a level up system. Every time you steal an item that's new, you get 10 times the XP. Otherwise, it's only like 1 or 2 XP. It's kind of shit. But it's not like, oh, you stole a pot, so any pot you steal from now on is only worth XP. No, it's you stole this specific pot from this area of this house. If there's another pot in another area of that house, if you steal that one, that's another 10 times XP. And it does that for every item in the entire game. In every single house. I was max level before I left the first neighborhood. It was fantastic. Yeah, I stole literally everything from every single house in the very first area. I just went from house to house, just knocking off every single area, just because I was like, I wonder how much XP I can get from this first neighborhood. There's like 10 houses in each neighborhood or something like that. So, it took a while. It took a while. But that XP allows you to level up your character. Because, like, at first, you can't even jump a fucking fence. Because you suck. So, one of the first upgrades you can get is jumping a fucking fence. And that's the agility tree. Later on, it allows you to climb up the vine growths up the side of a house onto, you know, second floors. One lets you move faster. Another one allows you to climb gutters. Then there's, you know, backpack upgrades. So apparently an upgrade is you can go and buy a new fucking backpack. Why you can't just do that is beyond me, considering you make a lot of money in the game.
Root beer, so it's like Skyrim.
Kind of. A little, yeah. Yeah, a little bit. Oh, God, no. Damn it. You also unlock different hacking items, the ability to steal some of the very, very few cars in the game. There's only 5 cars in the game that aren't the 2 that you can use, one of which you have to buy for a pretty sum of money. And for, like, the lockpicks, there's 4 of them outside of just the car lockpicks. And each one of them is a different fucking way of opening a door. Like, and they only work on that level of locks, even, which is weird. Like, the level 1 is a DIY tool pick, and it's basically, think of Skyrim and Fallout, how they do lock picking. There you go. whereas, like, the level 2 lock pick, it actually shows you the inside tumblers, and you have to knock the thing down. And then the 3rd one is just something that you hold a button, but it doesn't tell you how to use all of these. Like, it tells you how to do 1 or 2 of the standard lockpicks. Then it doesn't tell you how to do number 3 or 4. Doesn't tell you how to do any of the fucking car ones except for the very last one. It's like, this could use some explanation, so you know what the fuck you're doing. It took me a while to figure out how to use some of these, because it didn't fucking tell me. So again, just like the tank mechanic simulator, they could use a little bit of work on their, you know, tutorials. In other words, they could have some tutorials, realistically speaking. but overall,
it seems like a running theme with this, with Playway. They just need more tutorials.
Yeah, like, very much so.
Help us out, people. Help us out. Don't give up on us.
When you're breaking into houses, some of the houses are empty. Some of them are not, at least not at all times of days. And you can actually watch the people who own the house and see where they go. And it marks off giant chunks of time throughout the day. I think you have to watch them at like 4 or 5 different points, during the day. And it'll show you basically what they do throughout the entire day. So you know when they're at the house and when they're not, when they're in each different room throughout the house. So that if you're in the house while they're in the house, you can avoid them while you're stealing all their shit out from under them, which is fantastic.
Well, sounds like you're enjoying yourself with this one. So $20 on Thief Simulator. What are you thinking?
I'm all for it. It's really fun. I rather enjoyed it. It does get annoying sometimes, because if anyone who has a gun sees you, they'll take you out instantly. Even if you're in a fucking car driving away.
Yeah, I would say, like, what would you do to help improve it? But given the fact that the game is like 1.5 years old, I'm not sure that they're going to be updating it anymore. No. But it sounds like it's still worth checking out if piques your interest.
Yeah, it's not even a hard game to finish either. It's pretty easy. It's a little time consuming, but it's easy. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Cool. All right, one more game to talk about is Love Choice, developed by Akaba Studio, published by Rattleika Games, released September 10th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. It's the beginning of a new relationship. Will this one result in joy or sorrow? I'm guessing sorrow.
It depends, realistically. There's actually three different games in this game. Hmm. There's Love Game, which is a game about two game developers that meet at Game Jam, and it just talks about their first year relationship, and it can end poorly, or it can end okay, or perfectly. And it's basically just a visual novel style game where you select what your character says and stuff. You can even click on the background, and they'll talk about stuff on the background and things like that. It's pretty basic in that regard. Then there's the second one, which is a love game or Love Distance, which is about a different couple who have a long distance relationship that starts when they're in elementary school. They live near each other and they start getting to know each other, and it goes until they've graduated university. And it either has a effectively non-ending, where you just don't do anything with them, and then it has effectively two bittersweet endings, which both made me cry a little bit. Again, another visual novel style game where you select answers and stuff in the background to make it progress. Then the third one, what the hell was it called? Love Detective. It's about a woman who thinks her husband might be cheating on her, and she's going around her apartment trying to find clues. So it's a point-and-click style type game where you just find hints around the house to figure out what secret the husband is keeping. And it's actually kind of sweet. And there we go.
So the game three takes cute games.
About 2 hours. Yeah. Yeah. In total, to get every achievement throughout each three of these games, which requires multiple playthroughs of two of them, takes about 2 hours. Max.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's a pretty quick game.
I guess there's not much else to say about this one. $5, what do you think?
I am totally for this. I love this game.
Cool. Cool, cool. Alright, that's it. We're done.
Damn.
Gonna take a quick break. We will be back with more show. Purnell's gonna be here, and Matt DeLucas from Matrified Games is gonna be on the chat as well. But we're going to take a quick little break, listen to some music, and we will be back. Aki, do you have any final words to end this?
Teddy Sprinkles McGee.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Jacob and Aki for coming on and chatting about the news with me and doing reviews. But we got more show to take care of. And Purnell, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Could use a nap, but I got like a 20 ounce of coffee in me, so that nap ain't coming for me.
No naps. No naps. We got shit to do. We got company.
We got company.
We got company. Matt DeLucas of Matrified Games, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Welcome back to the show. It's been a while. How's things going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, it's been quite a while.
Your last appearance on the show was for Battle High 2 A+.
Yes.
How did that go?
It went fine. Yeah, it's been out on Xbox One and Steam for a while now. I never got around to getting online to it, which is unfortunate.
No, but you got me in it, which is cooler than online.
But imagine if you were online.
Yeah, I guess me in the game is a step back compared to online.
It depends on what your special moves were. I mean, if you just were just farting and stuff, it's like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah, it was
farting. If you had a cool like earthquake attack or like some kind of crazy thing where you like discus throws, like wham, wham, wham. Yeah, we're talking.
No, it was just all farts.
Lots of farting. This is what Battle High is all about.
It was all wrestling stuff, which I loved. It was perfect for me.
There you go. So that damn regard there, like if it was wrestling, you probably had to have some grapples, like good grapples.
The thing is, I'm terrible at fighting games. Matt, I'm probably the worst show to come on when it comes to fighting games because I'm terrible at fighting games. But thankfully, Purnell is here and he can actually play a fighting game without losing immediately.
Oh, that's hilarious. But what I can say is that despite being hot garbage when it comes to like the mainstream, I do enjoy like a good fighter here. Like I'm a Guilty Gear guy, like Rival Schools, Marvel versus Capcom. It's just for me, I'm not going to go to a tournament, but I will have a round robin with some friends who also equally suck at the game with me. I went to Winter Brawl a couple years ago, actually, to try to play with some friends. That was a learning experience in BlazBlue, but it was still fun. So that's what's important.
No,
so
we're not here to talk about BlazBlue. We're not here to talk about Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. We're here to talk about Merfight, Curse of the Arctic Prince. For the people who don't know what this game is, Matt, tell us about it.
Yeah, it is. I'd like to call it my spiritual successor to Battle High, actually, but it's a 2D fighting game, all with various merfolk characters in it. And it's sort of an approach. So the way you guys described your fighting game skills are actually kind of in the audience because I'm trying to create a fighting game that works kind of as a stepping stone more for newcomers and beginners to sort of get into the genre more than something more advanced.
You totally sidestep, get your feet wet.
Yeah, perfect analogy. You're getting all the water puns that I need to be adding to the game in the future.
Well, what are you waiting for? Get to writing them down. I'm an asshole. I'm sorry.
It'll happen. It'll make
what are you waiting for?
The water pun DLC. Come and get it. So
just getting like my feet wet with these puns.
So I guess the first question that we have based on your description there is you said that you were developing this with the intent being to make it more accessible to newbies or entry-level fighting game players. Are there any features related to that transition that are describable within podcast speak?
Yeah, I would like to think so. So there's Fantasy Strike and some games like that that have very simple special move input. But what I try to do in Merfight is kind of combine the two. So you can do special moves with just the direction and a button, and that's called like the lenient or easy input, you could say. And then you can do more traditional inputs, such as your quarter circles and your back circle inputs, and they both work. And if you do the more traditional input, you actually get like a slight meter bonus. So it's sort of encouraging players to do those and learn those over time, but not punishing them if they're kind of having trouble doing those or they're not like as skilled yet. But the hope is that as they play, they're going, okay, I get the hang of these different concepts more and more, a sort of learning. Because I think one issue, and there's many things to learn about fighting games, and they're very difficult genre for some people to get into long term, but I think there are just some tools tools missing from teaching players how to like do just like simple things like that. There isn't really a tutorial of like, well, how do you actually like move your thumb across a D-pad or stick to actually do this? And though my game doesn't have like that deep of a tutorial, the fact that I allow both is trying to let players sort of learn that through different systems.
And that's a good way to do it too. And I like the fact that you said that the attack by doing it traditionally doesn't give you a power boost. It gives you a meter boost, because if it did a power boost, that would end up resulting in like more of a balance and a power imbalance than like just having a little bit of a special meter gain. So it's actually nice to hear that it doesn't do like a power increase or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm still like on the fence of 100%. I've been discussing with the community a little bit. Like there was like one like, okay, if you do it properly, you get like iframes or it starts up a little faster. But definitely no like, oh yeah, the right way of doing it is like, you know, 10% stronger or something. It's just mostly right now it's just the meter boost for like most of the cast, except for there's a few charge characters, and those I do a little bit of a different thing if you actually take the time to charge. but that I might even change over time because, you know, the game's on Kickstarter, and one thing I feel like I kind of messed up in the Kickstarter is not being like, this is just a prototype. This is not the final build in any way, shape, or form. So things will definitely change as I continue to develop it, for sure. But yeah, for now, that's sort of my main goal, is to not make the traditional input that much overpowered compared to the basic one.
But tell us about the Kickstarter. What's all going on with the Kickstarter? What kind of goal are you setting? What is the plan for it? What's all going on there?
So it's my first ever Kickstarter, so the goal is small. I didn't want to do the like, oh, fund the whole game and, you know, 100K or anything like that, because I've been mostly self-funding it, so on. But I want to do voiceover work, and that does get a little expensive, and that's kind of challenging. So the Kickstarter is only for 5K. It's about 70% funded now. And it's mostly just going to go over to the voiceover work and paying the voice actors, once we start doing auditions, which the plan is, if it gets funded, to open auditions sometime in late October, mid November. And I'm actually working with Stephen, W. Hunt, who did voice acting and voice direction for Battle High. And I think and he's going to help with voice directing, for this game as well. And the whole goal is, you know, once the Kickstarter wraps up, to just do open auditions based on like the cast. So there's 12 characters. So there'll be 12 roles. Essentially, there might be a 13th role, but that's on the fence. But there'll be at least 12.
I was joking. I was like the narrator.
Well, yeah, you need someone to go round one fight. That was my audition, by the way. How am I?
Well, you gotta throw more water puns in there. Like, you know how it is. Like, nowadays, fighting games don't just do round one fight. Now they're like, you know, triumph or die, or this is about the rock. We're gonna rock your socks off, or heaven or hell. You can be like,
speaking of heaven or hell, can we appreciate some of the puns that are in Merfight, like heaven or shell?
They gotta do everybody in the pool round one.
I like that one. Yeah, right now I have heaven or shell, pass or scale, and the waves of fate are crashing. All influenced by other games.
That was my favorite, by the way.
Yeah, that one's
fate or crashing.
Yeah, a lot of people like that one. I have a few other. I have one. I wanted to do five. I have one that's very Soul Calibur inspired, which is just like kind of just like pointlessly long talking about streams of Destiny Crossing or something silly. I do like everyone get in the pool. I do like that one.
Everybody in the pool.
Everybody in the pool. Round one.
That'd be a great way.
Even Marco.
Like one random person, like their character freak, you know, and everyone like starts to battle. They have like their jump in and their statement. The one guy who's just like happy go lucky. Everybody in the pool. What? Like he's ready to fight. This guy's ready to throw down. I've been meaning to ask now since like we were, like, I was reading up on like the Kickstarter and I was looking at the videos and stuff. And the first thought that immediately came to mind, because it goes into the creative aspect of things, is why merpeople? What got you into this theme?
I wanted to do something different. I feel there are a lot of games already out there that kind of do the like pseudo modern, slightly advanced technology and or magic theme. You have King of Fighters, Tekken, Street Fighter, and Virtual Fighter. Even they're all just, and they all just are kind of the same. Not the same, but they're like, they just feel very similar theme-wise. And now I kind of feel there is going to be the reality that some people are going to be like, this theme is dumb. It's not for me. I don't like it. I hate it. And that's fine. I'm a big Darkstalkers fan, so I was like, I really like Rakua or Allbath or whatever the character's name is, the Merman. So I was like, oh, I want to build a whole cast around that. And instead of choosing like real-world martial arts for inspiration, I was like, oh, I can pick different sea life and pick that as inspiration in different ways. So
I gotta tell you, I was already, oh, keep going, because I was going to follow that, but now you keep going.
Oh, that's all I really got. But yeah, I just wanted to do something a little different. And I was really a big fan of Battle Fantasia, so I wanted to do something a little more fantasy themed.
That was cool, actually. I remember that game.
Yeah, so definitely that was another part of my goal, was to do something a little more fantasy and not like a modern time, even though it has some modern elements to it, but overall it's mostly aquatic sea life fantasy.
So then that got me thinking on the follow-up there, and I'm going to admit before I even ask the question that any effort that you put to this would be like 100% extra, because this will be, I personally feel like it'll be really hard to do, but you use a bunch of sea life to determine like for like character builds. You have an eel character and like and stuff like that. did you, like, when you were trying to come up with their move list and such, at any point were you like, what sort of character would an eel be? And what kind of moves would an eel use if he were a fighting humanoid?
Oh, yeah, I definitely did some of that. Like, Gigi is one of the main characters. I was like, I wanted a beta fish and an angler fish kind of hybrid. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, the angler fish has that bulb. Like, how would you use that bulb in a fight? And then beta fish are apparently violent fish sometimes. If you get, like, I think two of the same, like, gender in a tank, they don't like each other sometimes. So I was thinking of things like that. And, like, yeah, electric eel. So the eel character is electric. There's even more narrative things in the story concerning that. And then there's shark characters. The one shark character bites a lot.
Oh, we got some Amazon from Star Wrestling making a shot in here. Joe's like, what the hell? You bring that back in? All games, but I had
Star to, I had Pro Wrestling. You mean Starman?
Yeah, pro. Yeah, no. The Amazon from Pro Wrestling. That was his Amazon. Big thing. He would bite. He just bit everyone. he was the nibbler.
Man, that is such a reference. I haven't thought of pro wrestling in the longest time for the NES.
But it's always worth bringing up. It's always in the back of my head. That was my guy. but you mentioned in that dialogue there, the story. How about giving us a taste of, like, what is the overall arc of what's this narrative about? What is this story of Murphite?
So the other part that I'm doing is I didn't want to do the, like, there's a shady organization holding a tournament and it invited all the fish people. So the story's not like that. It's a little more,
I kind of like that idea though.
That would be the sequel.
Fish man.
this one is, it's a little strange. And there's always that, like, ironing in my head. This, like, when I have to talk to other people, I'm like, oh no, I sound crazy. But essentially there's, like, 9 kingdoms and each one has a monarch. And when that monarch is, like, about to die, they have to be replaced by their heir. So the heir is always, like, unknown and secret. And there's these shark knights or shark-alikes that search out the heirs. And so when they find them, they take the heir and they, you know, say, oh, okay, you're going to be the new monarch. But sometimes the monarch, in this case, the arse king, Ro, doesn't want to be replaced because he discovers that if he, like, stays there long enough, then he'll cause this, like, revengeful, cataclysmic event. So it becomes this sort of, like, he's trying to prevent being replaced, and then the other characters are trying to replace him. And then there's a few other side characters that are, like, there's, like, Dragos, the monster architect, who's, like, also dying and trying to find a protege. And there's Strike and Bolt, the heel and shark duo, that are just trying to, like, make money. So it's just, there's just a bunch of stuff. And of course, like, it's gonna get there. I, like, know where it is. It's just taking the time to iron it out. And that's one of the big things I need to work on next, actually, is, like, the story mode. Because one of the things I want to do with the story mode that I haven't seen a lot of games do is I want to do a lot of branching in it. I want to do a lot of, like, oh, you beat this opponent in less than, like, 30 seconds, so you get this like, special branch now, and the story's going to be different than just, like...
Oh, that would be cool. Like, the only game I've ever seen pull that I've played was, like, Guilty Gear Chrome X2 did that.
Yeah. I want to do stuff like that, and I think even Battle Fantasia had a little bit of that, but I want to do a good portion of that, and I'm only one dev mostly working on this. Like, I've had help with some things, but I'm not going to do, like, a big, giant cinematic story mode, like Injustice and all that. I don't have the skill or energy or time. and I also am not a big fan of the, like, I think it was Injustice 2. The one cutscene was so long that the default settings on my Xbox One were like, oh, I'm going to go into, like, sleep mode.
The screensaver popped up.
Yeah, like, it darkened the screen because it thought I was like, oh, it's like, you haven't touched the controls in, like, 30 minutes.
Like, and I was just like, RPG for a second.
Yeah, so I definitely want to avoid something like that. That's going to be another thing, is, like, making sure the dialogue is short enough so that the flow between a match and reading is not, like, too long, and you're not pressing X to get through the dialogue too much. Unfortunately, with the budget in the Kickstarter, the story mode probably won't be voice acted, but that is a unannounced, I'll announce it here, because why not? That's, like, my first stretch goal. That if I get to, I think it was 50K, if I get 10 times my goal, then I would try to do full voice acting for the story mode.
That'd be cool.
Definitely.
I guess it also comes down to who the voice actors are as well, and what they're available. Like, if for some reason you decide to bring me on again for a voice, like, I'll do whatever the fuck you want. Like, I just tell me and I'll do it. I have no problem. But some people might have schedules, and then you got to work with schedules and availability. Yeah, and I don't have that kind of stuff. I'm just bored.
Well, like, pretty easily goes into that anyways. Like, you give a bunch of lines and the person records them on their end. They send them in, and then you go, based on this, could you inflect a bit more here, or could you go a little deeper?
Yeah, especially, you know, I don't have a studio, and I'm not going to have people travel to said studio to record their lines. So I believe what Battle High mostly was each voice actor would just be like, okay, here's the dialogue. They would do two or three takes of each line and send that in. And I don't think we ever had anyone be like, okay, these are all garbage, you have to redo them. Like, I think that was enough to kind of get the hint, especially for Battle High's, you know, VO work. I think that was all, and that's most likely what Merfights is going to be. It's going to be like, you know, the basic grunts and groans and yells, and then like a few lines of dialogue for like intro, outro, you win, and things like that. So that's the other reason the budget is kind of low, because it's not like, I think when I was talking about like timeline, it was like, it should not take anyone more than like 2 to 4 hours to record. It's like a very short recording time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, of course, if it's doing like several dozen lines now for a story mode and each have different emotions and stuff, that's going to cost and take a lot more time.
And especially if you do the branching paths that you were talking about.
Yeah, but my plan with the branching paths is I did the math and whatnot, and I figured out the other thing too for the story mode that I really want to do is I hate story modes that only focus on like a third of the cast. I think Mortal Kombat has, you know, like, you never play as the villains really, at least in the first iteration of Mortal Kombat 11. It was just all the hero characters, and I want to do like every character fights every character in some way, shape, or form throughout this. So it's at least 144 matches, because that's 12 squared, I hope. If I got my math wrong, that's going to be really embarrassing.
So when you say there, are you basically saying that for every one of those matchups, the character has a unique like line or lines for their opponent?
No, not that kind of Mortal Kombat 11 intro style. It's more just like, there is a match in story mode with every pairing where you play as that character versus someone else, and then there's a reason within the story mode that you're fighting this particular person at this time.
That I can definitely say, if you pull it off, it'll be awesome. But you're also giving yourself quite the challenge, specifically because you added the whole "it makes narrative sense" part to it. It's like,
oh yeah, there's definitely some that are a bit of a stretch, and there are a few that are like, this is a flashback match because it does not make sense to what's going on right now. So it's just like, yeah, these two characters met like 5 years prior, and this is what happened.
Well, they just prepare to have that one scenario where it's like, oh man, I'm late for the cafeteria. I better hurry up, or I'm going to run out of eel burgers. Oh crap! You talk about eel burgers. Are you eating eels? Uh-oh, battle start.
I have not actually... That is actually a funny point. I have been like, what do these people eat? Like, I've been trying to answer all these questions, and I'm just like, do they eat other, like, smaller, uninvolved fish, kind of like Rocko's Modern Life, or are they just all vegetarian? I've not decided yet.
There's a whole arc right there. You can just write into the fighting game. It's like, there's a community of fish people that specifically want to eat other fish, but the more civilized environments are like, you know, we moved away from eating other fish. We want to live in harmony in this ocean. So the one
our
guy
society's
says, like,
moved beyond cannibalism.
Pretty much. It's like, you know what? I'm going to run with a really hunking beast of beta fish. Like, who? What? Not in my kingdom, you don't. Step into the ring. It's like, what? Some wildness there. A underground fish food smuggling ring.
Oh, my Lord. So what else are you looking to get accomplished with the Kickstarter? You mentioned that you're looking to get the voice acting funded. What other goals do you have? I notice one of the stretch goals is console versions. Do you have any plans of which consoles, or any thoughts in mind as to how that's going to go?
So my hope is, at least if not Xbox, whatever it's called now, it probably would, because I know right now you can still do Xbox One games, and then I believe they can get ported to the Series X stuff, to my knowledge, or Switch. I'm nervous about Switch because I feel performance-wise there would possibly be issues, but that, I mean, I would just have to optimize. But yeah, I know console-wise, one, I would do one of the three at least. I would love all three, but PlayStation is probably apparently very difficult, especially for solo indie devs to even get dev kits, let alone actually publish on them. So unless I could find a publisher or a affordable porting house to do it, right now by myself, it probably would just be Xbox, because that one, I mean, Battle High was on Xbox, so I have experience and I already have, like, you know, the tools needed to do that. But console work is very time consuming, especially because Murphy does have online, unlike Battle High, and there is a lot more testing I need to do online. You know, I have to test both dev kits and make sure that, like, yeah, if I, you know, unplug the Ethernet cable from the wall, it works as expected and, like, passes all the, like, cert and all the different things that, you know, consoles have to check. So it's definitely going to be, that's why it's definitely one of my later stretch goals. Before that, I have mini games, because people are like, oh, I really am sad that you took the mini games out of Battle High. And I was like, yeah, that is a bummer. And I would like to add something like that, even if it's just like a simple volleyball-esque thing to Murfight would be fun. I think those are my main stretch goals. But like the overall plan with the game is I kind of want to do a slow burn of it. Fighting games especially have like a very long lifespan with seasons and chapters, so like I'd love to get this polish of the voice acting in and then publish it and see, like, oh, okay, people are liking it, I can add DLC and that can help with future funding and whatnot as well, and see where that goes, because I definitely, like, right now it's only launching with 12, but I'd love to double that by the time I say, okay, I'm not touching this game anymore. But that is, you know, so many things can happen. So, and there's been so many, and the other reason I did this sort of a lower end on the Kickstarter is, like, the way I developed this game was very, most games, they do a very strong, like, vertical slice. They're like, okay, we're going to do like three characters and it's going to be super polished and you get like a very clear idea of what the game is. Murfight, because I was working by myself, I was like, I really like making the characters. I'm going to just make all 12 characters that I want in the game right now. And then it's like, but you haven't done VFX or SFX and the environments aren't done. And it's like, yeah, I know. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm working. The idea is to do early access early next year in 2022 and then be like, quote unquote, done version 1.0 2023 with all that polish done. The VO, the SFX, the backgrounds, the might even upgrade the shaders and the look of everything. That's what the plan is mostly to work on next year, because gameplay wise, sure, there's going to probably be new features and polish and balance here and there with it. But like for the most part, it's like, yeah, I have all 12 characters done that I wanted to launch with at least. But yeah, overall, that's sort of where I'm at with that. Oh, and I guess one 13th character would be a stretch goal as well. If it hits 10K, forgot to mention that one.
Lucky number 13. So that's what you would need the 13th voice actor for. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the narrator, 14.
And the secret boss character.
Yeah, 15. Oh, man, what other characters can we squeeze in here? Are you going to get Shovel Knight in there somehow?
Oh,
seems like every indie game has Shovel Knight in it.
No, probably not. I'll be the one indie game that doesn't get Shovel Knight.
Would you consider trying to get any kind of guest characters in the game if it succeeded and does well?
Well, I actually do have guest costumes in the game already. I have, for the Gamma, the crustacean mercenary, there's another fighting game, sort of a smaller indie fighting game called Schwarzer Blitz.
I'm not familiar with that one.
It's a very retro 3D fighter. It kind of looks almost like original Tekken, like that style. And they have an evil lobster character, so I just kind of used like that costume idea and put it on one of mine. So that, and then they put one of their characters in one of my costumes. So I'm very open to guest costume ideas for sure. If somebody was willing to, like, I would definitely be open to it if somebody approached and was like, hey, I got a character and like we can work out a deal of some kind. I'd be like, okay, cool. My only thing with guest characters is I would want to be like, okay, if I make a sequel and you don't want me to put the guest character in, I am at least putting in a new character that has the same move list if people like the guest character. Because I hate when a game has a guest character and then they just kill it off for the sequel and they don't have any character like it in the, like, at all. So you're just like, yeah, if you made a guest character, you just like don't really have a future in the series then. or you just have to learn someone new.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I
don't
think of other games that did that. I know the only one that comes to mind for like guest characters was like that Soul Calibur block a couple of years, like a decade or two ago. Like, what are some other fighting games that had like guest characters Smash? Like you're describing now? They brought all those characters back though, didn't they?
Well, for the new one they did, but you know, there were games in between where like Ice Climbers missed a game, and you know, they just had characters drop in and drop out, and now in the new one they have everyone, thankfully.
Yeah. Tekken has a bunch. Mortal Kombat 10 and 11, I think, had a good amount of guest characters.
10 had like all the horror icons, and now 11 has the action icons.
Yeah.
I had totally forgotten about that. You could, like, people were geeked, like, you need Freddy Krueger in this game.
And then you have situations like Dead by Daylight, where they lost the license for the Stranger Things DLC. And, you know, what's the point in having guest characters if it's only going to be for a limited time?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, if there's a move list that people like, I would want to preserve it, even if, like, the licensing for the guest character runs out. Yeah, and, like,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Could you make like a, I'm not sure about the legalities of it, but like, is it possible to be like a spoof character? Like, if like we were talking about Freddy Krueger earlier, you could have like a version of him where it's like he's not wearing a sweater, he's wearing a tank top, and he's not using claws, he's using spoons.
Yeah, parody is spoons. Parody is such a weird thing, because like there is apparently tons you can get away with parody, but then it's like, it's like you're walking on like thin ice. It's like any moment a lawyer from, because a good example is like Terrordrome was a fighting game. I think that's what it was called. They had all horror icons in it. It was just like a little indie thing, and then they had like Jason and Michael Myers and all that. And they got so many cease and desist. Apparently, eventually they just had to stop. And they're working on a new version or a new game. I don't know if it's still the same name, but it's just all generic. You know, what's that called when something has expired and you can just use it? I can't think of the name.
Free use.
Free use. So there's free use characters and just like public domain. That's what it is. They have public domain characters or ones that are very close to public domain characters and just some parody. So yeah, that's if I were to do like, it would be cool to do that, but it just feels very risky. I think Brian from Battle High is a good example of a parody character. He looks a lot like Jason Voorhees, but he's not at all. But, So that's again
for hockey.
What'd you say, Pernell?
I jokingly was like, he has a propensity for hockey.
He's a lacrosse guy.
Yeah, it's a lacrosse mask.
Nice.
Oh my lord.
I meant to ask this also too. Like, we're talking about, you know, the story and the character types and all that, but as you are in Kickstarter mode, you want to get those hits and all that. Like, if you were to like get like a general description, it's like, this is why you should buy my game, or this is what you would likely find interest in for my game. Like, what would you say? Like, what's your line?
Ooh, I'm always terrible at this, so I'm going to try my best. My line is, first of all, it's a fighting game, I call it a stepping stone. So it's not as easy as some out there, and it's not as complex as others. So it's somewhere that's like, I want to get into the genre, or I have friends that I want to introduce to the genre, and I want something that is different in terms of that will help them kind of slowly get used to it and get into it. And then the other theme is, or other part of that is just, I want to play something that just looks different, that just isn't what I'm seeing everywhere. So my tagline is just like, it's a stepping stone game that is different than what's out there now.
I can do that. And I can definitely say, like, I've had moments like that in the past. Like, if I think back hard enough, I want to say my intro fighters. I had played fighting games before this, mind you, but the one where I was like, oh, this is simple and I can work with it, it was like a game called Evil Zone on the PS1 a long time ago. But it was another one of those games where, like, it was like an anime fighter and they had like really simple inputs for moves, to the point where it was like, it was less about the execution of the move in the input form, but more like, it's how you use the move that is the game. So in that regard, I was like, okay, this makes sense. I can work with this. And then I was able to transition to more fighting games and have fun with those. And honestly, I feel like there aren't a great deal, if any, really like intro fighters that are existent in the current age. Like the closest, and this is a stretch, mind you, is probably like Smash Bros. With the whole like hit right and A to do a move or something. But that is a whole nother can of worms, because that's not a technical, that's not a typical 2D fighter. So, but I like that. I mean, honestly, I like the idea of this, the idea of you want to, you're making this style of a fighting game. And I think we need more games like that to hit the market.
Yeah, I think my one goal, this is like silly, but like it's a game that if I can play it with my dad, who is very computer and technology illiterate, but like I remember back in the arcade days, like we would still go and play a fighting game and enjoy it to a degree. So there's like, that's sort of my goal. It's maybe you're good at fighting games or you know someone who is, and like you want to get better. So the point of my goal with Murfight, or one of them anyway, is to like help people that, not necessarily help, but like just let people play them without the, like the same things that other games have. They just sort of like, I want to introduce something to friends who are new to the genre, and they can feel like they're still going to lose probably to somebody who's been playing fundamentals alone. It doesn't matter like how easy the inputs are, because there's so many other fighting game concepts that, mm-hmm. you know, input is just one of them. But the hope is that there is enough here in my game to help someone sort of get started a little more quickly and not immediately be like, ugh, I can't win, I'm just going to quit the whole genre, which is I feel often what happens. And that's another challenge of the genre in general, is like if you play with somebody new and you just crush them, there's a good chance they just aren't going to want to play anymore. Not everybody. There are some people that actually motivates more, and then there's some people that they're just like, I don't feel like dealing with this now. It doesn't feel good, and I have better things to do with my time.
Because I have one friend, if I'm remembering correctly, he refers to it as like the Yomi of the game, where it's like once you've established understanding of like how the inputs and all that work, now it becomes a question of like getting into the psyche of your opponents. Like if he does this, then the best counter is that. Na na na. And I personally don't think there's enough tutorials in the world that could teach that. You have to learn that on the hardened battlefield, so to speak.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, I mean, if you can get past the hurdle of just like input and understanding, this is how my character functions. I can beat level 5 difficulty on the computer. It is at least a way to get you started on the fact of believing I can control this guy in a base setting. Practice makes perfect. I'll just have fun playing with my friends until I feel like I'm good enough to get online and play with like the upper dog, the upper cruster or whatever. So like, and in that regard, I think it still works. Like just an understanding that like, you can't teach experience. You only mm-hmm. gain experience from the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a game, actually it's Fantasy Strike is kind of another game in this vein that it actually has much simpler inputs. And the goal of it is to get to that mindset and strategy. Gameplay-wise.
I like the sound of somebody to look into. I wouldn't mind seeing like how they build out the stepping stone, so to speak, like what their goal with their play by play is for that. Because I've been curious about how you would even attempt to do something like that.
Yeah, it feels like it's something that a lot of indie devs and a lot of just fighting game devs in general are trying to do, and it's a very difficult balancing act because you have the one, you do a Fantasy Strike is at like the very far end of the spectrum. That's like all like one button to do everything. I don't even think it doesn't have crouching or jumping. I think it has jumping, but it doesn't have crouching. So it like cut features so that you can get to sort of understanding the strategy more. But then there's some people that are just like, that's too simple for them and they want to go past that. So, and then, of course, you know, on the other end of the spectrum is just most other things. So I think, again, going back to Murfight, like that's what I'm trying to be, like a little bit more difficult than Fantasy Strike, but still like more of a stepping stone and easier than some other things out there.
Mm. Well, I think based on how you described it thus far, you're well on the way to doing that. And I like the idea, I like where this is going so far. So I'm definitely going to be following up and keeping up with what you do with it as it goes along. And one thing I did notice while reading up on the Kickstarter that I liked, and I'm trying to remember if I understood it correctly, because I want to say it was similar to Guilty Gear's Roman Cancels, but the pop, it was like pop break or something like that, where it was like a bubble that allowed you to like sort of almost input like a custom combo style deal.
Yeah, so Battle High had rush cancels, which were you do a normal attack and then you dash. Mm-hmm. And this is the same thing. So if you do any normal or special move, you can double tap in any direction, at least up, down, left, right, and then jump in that direction and cancel. So that's another reason why I say Murfight is kind of Battle High's spiritual successor for now, is because it has that mechanic. It's just called something different, and there's a few more you can do now. Up, Battle High only had left or right. This has up and down if you're in the air. But the idea is that it allows you to cancel. And another mechanic is I have this meter that kind of prevents, supposed to prevent infinites and touch of deaths, but it needs some balance and treatment. But the idea is that, like, another thing in fighting games that I feel is doesn't feel great when you're losing is, like, especially this is more of a Marvel problem, but, like, just being stuck in a long combo for, like, several seconds and your character dies and you're just kind of, like, waiting. You're, like, you're paying attention because you hope your opponent messes up, but you're, like, yeah, they're probably not going to, and now I'm just going to be waiting, like, 20 seconds till my character dies. And you kind of, and so the point of this is to just sort of cut that time short and prevent it and kind of reset the situation. But then the pop cancels allow you to reset it and essentially make the combo longer, which is where some of the balancing comes into, because some players have already figured out, like, yeah, if I have, like, 2 meters, I can kill any character with this combo. And I'm like, oh, great. But that is going to, I mean, if I launch the game, even if I do a console version, someone's going to probably find a bug that locks the game up that I was just like, of course you found that one bug that I didn't find out. So
that's how it always is. It's not until it hits the public that someone finds something that you overlooked that just destroys the game.
Yeah.
Well, let's be real. I mean, like, if speedrunning taught me anything, is that a playtester can never account for what the community is going to do, because they find some bonkers crap that no one in their right mind would have attempted to do otherwise.
Yeah. That would be another thing, too, if I get the console stretch goal, is hiring a QA team would definitely be an important thing to do. But for now, like, yeah, it's mostly just me and the community just playing the game and finding, like, hey, this thing happened. There haven't been, fortunately, too many, like, crash bugs or anything like that, but there have been a few combos that I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's definitely going to need some tweaking.
It's good that there's no crash bugs. I know our buddy Carnage, who's hanging out in chat, said he was playing a game earlier tonight, and it soft-locked 4 times in an hour.
Ooh.
I'm not going to mention the game title just so that I'm not throwing them under the bus, but that's bad.
After we're done recording, though, I want to know, because that's an interesting story that I feel like needs a conclusion. So I want to know what game it was.
I hope it's not Murphite. Now, but I don't want to say there's no crash bugs in Murphite. There's probably something that I'm not aware of. There's always is, but, you know, hopefully not too many. I know the hardest thing, especially at least with the engine I'm using and all that kind of stuff, is, like, and fighting games in general, so many people have different sticks and controllers. And I had people in for Battle High, they were like, well, we want to play with 2 keyboards. And I was just like, wait, what?
Why?
Just things like that. Or no, it was, they wanted 2 people to play on the same keyboard. And it was,
that was cramped.
I was like, that wouldn't really work because most keyboards can't even register more than, like, 2 or 3 hits at the same time. So, like, I don't really, like, you could try. And, like, but I never ended up doing that. But, yeah, there's just a lot of challenges with device inputs for sure. But I actually, someone was streaming the game the day I launched the Kickstarter, and it even had my mystery device prompt worked. So that was exciting to see. A little dread. I was like, oh God, please work. And I'm like watching it. He's like entering in. He's like, okay, my Brook converter stick works. And I was like, oh, okay. Whew.
Damn. Oh man. So what else is there for the Kickstarter? You're looking for voice acting. Is music on the docket, or is that all taken care of?
Music is at the moment taken care of. There might be like 1 or 2 tracks that pop up I need, but for now it's like pretty much done. It's just 12 tracks. It's actually one of the add-ons is a majority of the soundtrack you can get as part of the Kickstarter. There's like, I think it's like a majority of the songs. There's a few songs I can't include at the request of the original composer. They're like, oh, I would rather you not include it in the thing. And that's fine. I want to respect their request. For the most part, the soundtrack is pretty much done. I would say the biggest things that need to be done, environment art is probably the biggest, because I like character art and I like character animation. I'm not a huge fan of doing environment art. It's not my favorite, but I've started to get used to it and like trying to get better with it. But that's probably one of the biggest ones that need to be done. VFX and sound effects are probably the biggest, and VO. Pretty much all the polished things that if it's bad, people notice it, but if it's good, people usually don't care about it too much. They don't always like notice it. They'll just like, oh yeah, it sounds great. But if it's bad, they'll notice.
Yeah, so hopefully you get some good voice talent in there. I know we're going to send our buddy Norg to try and get in your game. I have a couple of friends I'm going to send your way to try getting in there. Pernell, are you going to try?
If there's a feasible thing to try, that would be fun.
I want Pernell to be the announcer. Round one, fight, motherfuckers.
Get your ass in the ring. But honestly, I'd be cool if I was like this random fishman who just happened to wear headphones, like just bop a bit, like, yeah, I'm ready to rock out. Maybe like a capoeira fighter or something. Even a little bit of wisecracking too.
Man, we're just gonna take over this game, the SML fighting game. We're gonna conquer this. That would be awful. And there's no way I would put you through that. But the game is on Kickstarter right now. By the time this episode goes out, it'll have about 2.5 weeks left, and it's already, you're at 3,600 out of 5,000. So I think you're easily going to make this.
Hopefully. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. It's my first Kickstarter, and every time I look at the numbers, I'm like, is this good? Is my trajectory okay? I don't know. And there's no like easy answer for it, because every Kickstarter is different. There's sometimes where it's like, well, if I asked for more, would I be getting more? Like, I don't really know, like, where this all falls. The worst thing I did find is a Japanese article was posted about the Kickstarter. I was like, oh, that's great. One of the first like quote tweets I saw of it was someone going, this game's Kickstarter was garbage. I don't trust any fighting game Kickstarters from now on. And I'm like, son of a, like, I'm so bitter. I was like, of course. So well, like
someone else's Kickstarter ruined every future fighting game Kickstarter.
For yeah, at least for like this one person. And there's probably more. And like Mighty Number 9 is a great example of like a Kickstarter that really sullied game Kickstarters for everybody.
Oh yeah.
Because like that's like the big problem too. Not the big problem, but a big problem. And then there's just Kickstarter is such a unique environment, I'm learning. There's so many, like, you know, there's that whole thing where like this game is asking for an amount that like is way lower than you would think, and then you find out later they're like, oh yeah, we had a publishing deal that if our Kickstarter passed, then they would publish us. So it's like they didn't actually, like, they needed that money, but it was to prove that there's a market for it, not that they actually need that money.
And I feel like though also, and Mighty Number 9 is a good example of this, is that Kickstarter, like you said earlier, Kickstarters are different for every game, both in their execution and how they're received by the public. But some of it falls on the actual person, the customer too, because like right now you have a fairly modest goal. If you met that goal, you could always expand on it to say, okay, since we reached 5,000, here's an update, we're going to tack another 2,500 on the back, and here's what we're going to do with it if we get it. Mighty Number 9, when I look back on that Kickstarter, it exploded with like excess ambition. Like, he went from having a game with a soundtrack to like an anime and like a ridiculous amount of like paraphernalia of like clothing and merchandise. Like, he tried to start off an entire empire from the game's Kickstarter. It didn't even exist yet. And he had a whole empire planned off of just the donations. Like, when that one came out, I was like, yep, I'm only putting in the base. I'm not even going off all this other stuff because I don't trust it. I just want a game. He can keep all the other nonsense. That's too much. And that's pretty much how it played out. I mean, you keep your Kickstarter modest with like reasonable goals and, you know, proof product to show what you're capable of. I think people would still respond to that.
That's definitely the hope. That's definitely the hope I was going for when I was designed it. That's actually funny you mentioned rewards, because I'm not doing any physical rewards. All my rewards are digital. They're either design a character color, a character costume, be a background character in one of the stages, or what was the other one? Oh, just like, you know, Street Fighter, they have those little title cards you can select. Be like, awesome fighter, like just like that you can equip when you go online. Those are just mine, because as a solo dev, I was like, I'm not going to be taking the time to print several dozen t-shirts and mail them out and like do all that. Like, it's just so, like, if I had a team, sure, maybe I would consider doing that. But as I try to keep stuff as like, I do a majority of the work by myself. Like, yes, I work with contractors and they're very important. I don't really like calling myself a solo dev even. But I am doing majority of it myself. So I just don't want to do the hassle and headache of physical rewards.
Which makes sense. I have some friends who ran a Kickstarter a couple years ago, and they just got swamped with all the physical stuff that they promised, and it bit them in the ass. But you got to be careful with what you promise. And
you know, the last thing you want is to actually have physical stuff, get it all out there, and have some wackadoo posts up on Twitter like, look, he told me, he promised me vinyl, and instead I got some kind of weird plaid or plexi fabric or something. And just like, yeah, sully the effort you put into it. So like, it's much easier to do like just straight digital, easy to deliver, and less complicated. So it's not as easy for someone to try to give you like weird criticisms for it. Like, here's my product, thank you. You
know? Yeah. Be like, one person gets the poorly printed shirt that I somehow missed, and it becomes like a whole thing. Mm-hmm. Just that kind of stuff. I would probably have to double the goal if I was going to do physical rewards at that point. I'd probably just be like, yeah, I can do shirts with the logo on it. Cool. But like, to actually do it, because the money for the rewards from the Kickstarter goes into the rewards. So,
no.
The physical ones, anyway. The digital ones are going to be part of development anyway. Like, I'm going to do alternate costumes regardless of if someone designs one or not. So they're just filling the gap with something they want, as opposed to, you know, creating a new thing. A new physical item.
Which is a good way to do it. But yeah, I know we've been chatting for quite a while about the game. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Not really. I think we covered all the bases for the game itself. I'm hoping that, if you get a chance to try it, I'm hoping you like it and that it, you know, sort of stands at that. If my whole, like, stepping stone analogy makes sense. That's my goal. Like, if you're like, this game is complicated as hell, what is he talking about? Then I have a problem. But I would say that's my, I think you hit all the major points that I wanted to hit.
Carnage in chat saying, have Norg do voiceovers. Do eat. Everybody in chat, this entire conversation has been like, you need to have Norg in the game. Norg is the guy who does the intro at the beginning of our show. He's been doing our intros for the entire run of this show, and he's actually the voice of the narrator, the commander in Contra 4.
Mm.
So he actually has some voice acting experience behind him, and I think he'd be a better fit for the game than me, because I suck. Ha. Huh. Well, where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing and the game and everything else?
Well, the easiest thing to keep up for me is just on, I'm mostly on Twitter. I'm a bit of a Twitter hound. At Matrified is my Twitter handle. That's probably the easiest way. For the game itself, there's just merfight.com. The Kickstarter is ks.merfight.com. That's a redirect anyway. Not mefight.com, which I have tweeted numerous times and much to my embarrassment. But yeah, those are what I would say would be the best two ways, just to check out the website. And then that has links. It's playable now for free on itch.io and GameJolt. You can download a playable build. There's also a Linux build if you want to try out. But it's mostly just for PC or Windows right now. That is going to be an open beta or open alpha, whatever. I'm calling it alpha for now. Steam Early Access is going to be early next year, and then those free channels will close. So if you want to try out the game, you have until the Steam version is out.
Sounds good. And we will be sure to keep people updated when we know more about the Steam release. You'll have to come on and chat with us when that version's ready to go.
Yeah, I'll have plenty of stories about how my Steam early release goes, because it will also be my first. I've done a Steam game before, Battle Highs on Steam, but I've never done an early access release. And I think fighting games are a good genre for it, because those games change so much in their first iterations. But it'll definitely be interesting to see if that was a good move or not.
And if it comes down to it, you mentioned Xbox. They have a Xbox game preview as well. That might be a possibility.
I'll have to look into that one.
It's like Xbox's early access program that they have. But yeah, it's been awesome having you on chatting. For people who want to know more about the game, check out the links below the description of the video. We'll have all the info down there. You could go check it out. Matt, it's been awesome having you on chatting. Pernell, it's been great having you on as well. We are going to wrap up this episode. It's been a pleasure having everybody on chatting. Yeah, Matt, do you have any final words to end the show?
No. I was like in my head, I was just like, oh, say a fish pun, and I'm just like, I got nothing. Just thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's definitely, the Kickstarter has been a learning experience, and finding avenues to talk about the game, to have people stream it, has definitely been like something I have am learning about. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to have me on and talk about the game.
And hopefully I see you at MAGFest again. Are you going to be going this year?
Ooh, this year? I don't know. I'm on the fence. I forget what their COVID policy is now.
It's vaccinations required and masks required.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that first part. So that definitely makes it more likely with that first part. But I'm a little still on the fence only because like travel in the winter is always... Last time I did MAGFest, it was like I had to drive back like almost in a snowstorm. So that was like not great. So if I go home for the holidays and it's just like a short drive from my parents' house to MAGFest, like maybe I could get it to work, but no promises, but it's definitely a maybe.
Well, hopefully we see you there, because Pernell, I'm sure you're going.
I'm still on the fence about it, too.
Really?
Yeah, like honestly, aside from just the idea that con crud is a normal thing outside of the present.
True.
And like, I think I was in the forums about it before, where I was like, I think their policy is good and I like it, but... It's still going to be fairly challenging to properly, fully enforce it with a roster of like volunteer staff and stuff. But not just that, but also just as you already know from MAGFest experience, because you have to bust your ass to get room and all that stuff. I would never be good at that. Like, there's like a
So that works for you.
That is true. I could technically swing down for like a day or something and come back. So honestly, now that you mention it, maybe I could even do something like that. Worst case scenario, like I have like a last minute decision to want to pop in. I come down for like a day and go home.
Well, there you go. And if it happens, and, maybe if Murfight's down at MAGFest, I guess we'll see it there.
Oh, Christ.
Hopefully it makes a splash.
Oh, hopefully it baits enough.
God. Pernell, you're all wet.
Oh, no. That was close, though. That is probably the other reason I enjoy the game. I do enjoy making all the silly sea and fish puns. And I don't care if people hate it because of the puns, you're not my audience. Get out.
Oh, no, I have a weird relationship with puns where it's like, if it makes me groan, that means it was great.
Yeah, that's everyone's relationship with puns.
We're not going to end this show. We're just going to keep making fish puns and... We need an ending. Someone end this, please. Oh my god, we need an ending.
Rod and reel him in. Christ, it's done. There it is.